Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Testimony from law enforcement on what went wrong before and during the Capitol insurrection and Tiger Woods serious in a car crash. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC. The violent rollover, the car mangled roadside. New information from police.
The interior was more or less intact, which kind of gave him the cushion to survive. Otherwise, it would have been a fatal crash.
And we're live at the hospital awaiting an update from surgeons. Plus, Mike Tirico on the golfing legend and sports icon who'd hoped to return to the Masters in the spring. Bad intel, communication breakdown. Former security officials on the failure to anticipate the violent intent of the Capitol Hill mob.
The most pressing challenge that we have right now is the lack of supply of vaccine doses.
Meeting the demand. The five companies behind the vaccines promising a huge production surge. But what's their plan to counter the emerging variants?
Live from CNBC. The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Tiger Woods reported to be in surgery in the hospital. Tiger changed the game, maybe the greatest to ever play it. He's seen so much triumph and turmoil, now in the middle of another crisis with the world watching. Good evening. Tiger was driving alone, say police. He's badly hurt, but expected now to survive. Cops say it happened like this. At 7:12 a.m. local time, Tiger was driving fast on a winding downhill road in a residential area of Palos Verdes, south of Los Angeles. Somehow he hit a curb, smashed into a tree, and rolled over several times. When the medics arrived, he was in bad shape, both legs seriously injured. The first deputy on scene says Tiger was conscious and talking, but not able to stand at all on his own power. Cops say his safety belt and airbags likely saved his life. They say they used an axe and other tools to remove him from that car. The LA County Sheriff says there's no evidence of impairment from drugs or alcohol or anything else, but he admits it will take weeks to complete the investigation into the crash. Local coverage now from NBC4 Los Angeles. Their reporter Kim Tobin live in Harbor UCLA Medical Center in Torrance. Kim?
Hey there, Shep. Good afternoon to you. And we are awaiting still the medical update on Tiger Woods, waiting to get a condition. But we know that he was brought here in serious condition, and he likely is still getting surgery there, possibly on both legs after those injuries he sustained in this rollover crash. And the good news here, according to authorities, he was actually brought here. That decision was made for him to be brought here to Harbor UCLA Medical Center because he didn't have to be brought to the closest hospital because his injuries were not life-threatening. So they wanted him here at this trauma center where they could get him into surgery. But we do want to talk about this stretch of road. The Sheriff's Department has talked about how this is a windy downhill stretch of road on Hawthorne Avenue. And this is where they've seen several other crashes in the past before. Now, according to police, Tiger Woods was driving here. They are still looking to possibly see if speed was a factor. But there were no brake marks in the road, no skid marks that they found. Looks like he hit an embankment, hit a tree, rolled several times. There until he came to rest on the driver's side. And like you mentioned, first responders had to use several tools to get him out. And it was actually a neighbor who called 911 who heard that crash and alerted authorities. And once deputies arrived there, they got him out of that car. They were able to talk to him. He was alert. And it actually took a moment for the first deputy to ask his name and realize that this is one of the biggest athletes in the entire world he was talking to. Take a listen.
I asked him if he knew where he was, what time of day, just to make sure he was oriented. He seemed as though he was lucid and calm. He didn't seem concerned of his injuries at the time, which is not uncommon in traffic collisions. Many times people tend to be in shock. It's a traumatic experience, so it's not uncommon for people to be focused on unimportant things, or even if they are in pain, they might not feel it until much later.
We want to mention as well that Tiger has been on a long medical journey. He's had 5 back surgeries, his most recent just a couple of months ago. So he was still recovering from that. And then obviously to get in this car accident could have made things much more difficult to deal with once he arrived here at the hospital. So we are still waiting for an update, possibly from his surgeons, from the medical staff here at Harbor UCLA. But a lot of celebrities, a lot of people in the sports world, all over the fans, hoping he pulls through and that he recovers. Shep.
Kim, thank you so much. Mike Tirico's here from NBC Sports. Mike, you know, Tiger did it all. He conquered and changed the game. He inspired millions. He's fallen dramatically along the way, and largely he's gotten up, found a more peaceful place of late, I think most agree. And now this.
Yeah, well said. The perspective of an incredible career arc. And Shep, we've seen it since he was a young kid. On TV, the old Mike Douglas show, hitting golf balls with Bob Hope just a few months after he could really walk, on through winning junior amateur champions, amateur championships, 82 tournaments, as many as anyone on the PGA Tour, tied with Sam Snead for that all-time mark, 15 major championships as a pro, second to Jack Nicklaus. But as you said, there have been the peaks, the valleys, the roller coaster, and it seems as though after the last valley, Tiger picked up even more fans on the way back up, and we saw the golf world, the sports world, and just look at the coverage today. Everyone in America just kind of hold their breath, hoping for news that these were not life-threatening injuries and wishing the best for Tiger.
Oh, for sure. You hope he fully recovers. You know doctors can work miracles these days, but after 5 back surgeries, and we don't really know the details of the legs, this is going to be hard no matter what.
You know, your first indication would be, this would be tough. But we've learned early enough in sports, in covering sports, you don't speculate on injuries. You wait to see what they are. The human body has shown to be incredible with medical technology, like you said. And Tiger's been as resilient as any athlete, those 5 back surgeries and other procedures. You kind of push that down the road because you're just worried about quality of life and can you get around and do all those things. But the one thing I will say, Shep, I have no idea the depth of the injuries, the severity. If anyone physically could, that's one guy I would never bet against. He has been able to play after I thought he was done, and not only play but win a tour championship in 2018 and the Masters in 2019. He's been superhuman in some of his feats coming back from injury, but this is a different conversation, it feels like, right now.
Yeah, and a whole world pulling from him, which never hurts.
Yeah.
Mike, it's great to see you. Thanks so much. We're hoping for word from those doctors, as Kim mentioned, from the hospital. We'll go back live there the moment that happens. And minutes from now, we're live at the crash scene for a close-up look at where it all happened. But first, the Capitol insurrection. Who or what was to blame for the colossal failure to secure and protect the Capitol on January the 6th? Well, the Senate held its first hearing on that to find out today. Senators questioned top security officials who were in charge that day. They testified that poor intelligence left them unprepared for the mob. The former Capitol Police chief said he never saw a warning from the FBI on the day before the riot about the serious danger they were facing.
I witnessed insurgents beating police officers with fists, pipes, sticks, bats. These criminals came prepared for war. They came with their own radio system to coordinate the attack, and climbing gear and other equipment to defeat the Capitol's security features. We properly planned for a mass demonstration with possible violence. What we got was a military-style coordinated assault on my officers and a violent takeover of the Capitol building.
The now former Capitol Police chief told senators that it took the National Guard 4.5 hours to arrive after he requested their help. NBC's Garrett Hake now. Garrett, the officials blamed the feds, they blamed each other, and all acknowledged a breakdown in security and communication. It seems we've lost the connection with Garrett Hake, but the moment we get it back, we will go back to him for that. In the meantime, executives from Pfizer and Moderna telling House lawmakers that the companies expect now to double and possibly triple vaccine shipments in the coming weeks. Great news on the COVID front. Today, Pfizer's chief business officer said the company can ramp up production from around 5 million doses a week to more than 13 million by the middle of March. And Moderna announced it can double its supplies and turn out about 40 million doses a month by April. Right now, the United States is averaging about 1.5 million shots in arm every day. But with the extra doses from Pfizer and Moderna, that number, they say, could grow to about 3 million. CNBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine for us. Meg, what does today's news mean for everybody getting vaccinated?
Well, Shep, it means that at some point, as unimaginable as it is right now, we are actually going to have more vaccine in the United States than we can even use. We aren't projected to hit that point until the summer, but we got new information today about what the ramp up to that point will look like over the coming months. Now, one key detail, how much vaccine Johnson & Johnson expects to have by the end of March? More than 20 million doses. And because that's a one-and-done vaccine, that means at least 20 million people fully vaccinated. Now, you combine that with the projections from Pfizer and Moderna, both doubling output by April, and you get to enough vaccine for 130 million people by March, 275 million by May, and 400 million by the end of July. And remember, there are only about 330 million of us in this country. Of course, we know that vaccine supply doesn't mean shots in arms, but today at least, getting the clearest picture yet of how much vaccine will be ready here in the U.S. and by when, Shep.
And the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it heads to the FDA this week with some news expected as soon as tomorrow morning, right? What can you tell us?
Yeah, so tomorrow morning we get to see the results of the FDA's own analysis of the J&J clinical trial data. Remember, we saw at the end of January that single shot was 72% effective in the U.S. and completely prevented hospitalization and death from COVID. Now, key questions we may get answers to in these documents. Did variants in the U.S. affect the efficacy? Will there be any clues to whether the vaccine can reduce transmission? Now, the FDA's advisors then meet Friday to discuss the data and vote. And if all goes well, we could see the third vaccine authorized in the U.S. as soon as this weekend, Shep.
All right. Meg Terrell, thank you. Dr. Kavita Patel now, NBC News contributor, White House Health Policy Director under President Obama. Doctor, thanks for being here. The big news out of today's hearing, more doses than expected coming across the board, including 20 million now expected from Johnson & Johnson by the end of March, of course, once that vaccine's approved. How big of an impact could all of this have, really, on not just the process, but our lives?
Yeah, Shep, it's great news. And across the board, as you said, from the two manufacturers we currently have, Pfizer and Moderna, and then three manufacturers, which we hope, as you said, Johnson & Johnson, Novavax, and AstraZeneca, soon to follow. So it can dramatically change our lives. A small way it's going to change them is that, Shep, if you're vaccinated and you're getting together, you actually can with others who are also vaccinated and at their point of immunity. And you could get together in a small group and potentially not wear your masks and have, once we get that data that you can't give it to others, which I think they also alluded to should be coming, then that will also have a dramatic effect. Imagine kind of getting back to normal as early as the summer.
Amazing. I mean, I'm just thinking my parents got both shots to get both myself and to be able to hang out with them. That would be a dream come true, you know. But we've been listening to the pharmacist doctor, and they've complained that they are not allowed to pool the COVID vaccines, combining smaller portions left over from the end of one vial to make a full dose. They do this with other vaccines all the time, like the flu shot. It's a regular thing. Why not COVID shots?
Yeah, Shep, it's a great point. There's actually some good kind of reporting and hospitals that are really trying to put this forward. I think if you take a step back, it has to do with the conditions that are required, especially by the FDA, for handling and making sure there's no cross-contamination. Having said that, as you point out, hospitals and other health systems are very used to doing this, and they follow standards that are set forward by the industry. So this is a potential way not just to get six doses out of a vial, for example, but to get seven or eight doses by combining a vial with other leftover. So this is incredible. I do think it's something that the FDA is taking very seriously, but I also think it's going to be important to put controls in place to make sure that these standards and safety precautions are very clearly delineated by the manufacturers. But it's good news. Moderna, by the way, Shep, is also today in their testimony said that they're looking and talking to the FDA about having 15 doses in a vial. That all needs to go through approvals. The FDA feels that sense of urgency. But we should be starting to see more doses. And as Meg said, doses really have to translate to shots in arms to make the difference. But they will make a difference.
Progress on so many fronts. Dr. Kavita Patel, thank you so much. So we had technical difficulties on our report about the Capitol insurrection and the testimony today. Fixed. Garrett Hake is with us now. Garrett, officials at the hearing on the insurrection blamed the feds. They blamed each other and admitted there's just a complete breakdown in security and communication.
Yeah, that's right, Shep. Really two different types of failures here, both tactical failures. Why did an FBI intelligence report not make it all the way to the decision makers in the Capitol Police and in the sergeants at arms offices on the eve of the attack? Why were the National Guard not on standby? Why did those calls take so long to get through? But also strategic failures were unveiled here. The fact that the Capitol Police don't drill for this kind of attack. They aren't expressly trained for what happens when this many people are able to infiltrate the Capitol. Really, a lot of questions raised, and as you pointed out, significant finger pointing here, so much so that we're going to have another hearing, perhaps as early as next week, with figures from the Pentagon, from the FBI, and from the Department of Homeland Security to examine particularly those tactical failures. Why wasn't information conveyed, and why wasn't more done when the attack itself occurred? But talking to senators after the hearing and hearing from them as they were speaking, even on the dais, it was pretty clear there could be large-scale changes coming for how the Capitol is protected. Here's Senator Amy Klobuchar, who chaired this hearing today, giving some of her closing thoughts, Shep. Listen to this.
To me, you can point fingers, but you could also look at this as a process that is not prepared for a crisis. And it's clear that that action must be taken not only to protect our Capitol, but also to protect the brave officers charged with protecting the citadel of democracy.
And Shep, I heard the same thing from Republican senators this afternoon, too, that the entire structure of the Capitol Police may have to change to keep up with the modern threats against the entire Capitol complex.
It sure sounds like it. Garrett, thank you. Apologies for the audio. Hard times. Well, he was late out of the gate due to the rocky transition, the new president, right? Now, President Biden is working to fill out his cabinet and hitting some roadblocks. Two history-making nominees facing resistance on both sides of the aisle. In scope and scale, officials calling it beyond anything the United States has yet confronted. Tonight, investigating and understanding the extent of the SolarWinds cyber attack. Plus, the child care crisis.
If child care isn't there, essential workers can't get to work.
The domino effect on our economy if the daycare system fails.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 60 seconds.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
He's been in office more than a month now. Yet President Biden has only 9 of 23 cabinet-level nominees confirmed by the Senate. It's a low number. Here's how it stacks up against previous. President Trump had 14. President Obama had 16. Again, President Biden, 9. Some of Mr. Biden's nominees are facing some tough fights, driven by opposition and concerns from Republicans and one Democrat. Senator Joe Manchin, moderate from West Virginia, who the AP called today one of the most powerful people in Washington. CNBC's Kayla Tausche now. Kayla, how is Senator Manchin factoring into these confirmation fights?
Well, Shep, in the more contentious cases decided by just Democrats in this 50-50 Senate, he is the deciding factor. The Biden administration hopes that he's just building political cover in the conservative state he represents to eventually support its COVID relief package next week. But it comes at the cost of three potential cabinet nominees. Manchin will vote no on Neera Tanden for budget director and has not said he'll support the picks to run the Departments of the Interior or Health and Human Services. More than 70 Republican lawmakers signed a letter to President Biden demanding Javier Becerra, most recently California's attorney general, be withdrawn as the HHS nominee due to lack of qualifications. During the first 2 days of hearings, Senator Richard Burr agreed.
I'm not sold yet. I'm not sure that you have the necessary experience or skills to do this job at this moment.
New Mexico Congresswoman and Interior nominee Deborah Holland was in a difficult position today, defending the administration's move away from energy production on federal lands when states like hers and other Western lawmakers depend on that revenue.
From Alaska's perspective, you've got to understand that they're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, why is this administration out to get us?
First of all, Senator, I know that President Biden doesn't want to cripple any state. He put the pause on the new leases in order to review the program.
Senator Murkowski, the Alaska moderate, is also the White House's last best hope to secure support for Neera Tanden at OMB. She suggested she may wait to decide until the nomination comes to the Senate floor, which could happen following Tanden's committee votes tomorrow. Today, President Biden said he still thinks that Tanden has a good shot. Shep?
Kayla Tausche, thank you. The White House says the president and first lady will head to Texas on Friday as the state recovers from last week's deadly winter storm. The press secretary says they'll meet with local leaders in Houston to discuss relief efforts and that Mr. Biden will also visit a vaccine distribution site. Last week, the president approved a major disaster declaration for much of Texas. It allows the state to tap into federal aid to help people who've suffered so mightily because of the deep freeze. An endangered species gets a new start, and a prince delivers a royal update as we go round the world in 80 seconds. The United Kingdom. Prince Philip will be in hospital for several more days. That's the word from Buckingham Palace and youngest son, Prince Edward.
He's a lot better, thank you very much indeed. And he's looking forward to getting out.
The royal family says the 99-year-old is undergoing treatment for an infection, but that it is not COVID-related. Both the Duke of Edinburgh and the Queen received their COVID vaccines last month. Cuba. Officials closing streets and building barricades in Havana to slow the spread of COVID. The country reporting its highest surge in new cases since the start of the pandemic. The most advanced vaccine candidate from Cuban doctors is scheduled to enter late-stage clinical trials next week. Indonesia. Crews releasing 10 critically endangered Bornean orangutans back into the wild. You can see they used a helicopter to transport the primates into the forest. Researchers say the animals could be susceptible to the coronavirus, so they airlifted them to limit contact with humans during the mission. Now a special monitoring team will track the orangutans to ensure that they're settling back into the wildlife. And that's our trip into the forest and round the world in 80 seconds. A new vaccine strategy. Keep it simple. One governor's plan to get more shots in arms. And the one exception when he joins us live. And following developing news in Southern California, we're live at the scene of that serious car crash that sent the golf legend into surgery. And now we wait to hear from his doctors as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
One of the minds behind Tesla now putting his energy into disrupting a whole new industry, recycling batteries. It's estimated that at least 5 billion lithium-ion batteries are manufactured globally every year. But industry experts tell CNBC only about 10% of those are ever recycled. Getting that number up could drive down costs for automakers and tech companies. J.B. Straubel's new company planning to do just that. He used to be Elon Musk's number two, serving as the chief technology officer for Tesla. CNBC's Phil LeBeau is live in Carson City, Nevada. Phil, you got exclusive access to this new business. Tell us.
We did, Shep, and we're here at Redwood Materials. Why are we here? Well, look what they have here. They are swimming in a sea of old, no longer usable lithium-ion battery packs like that one for a cordless drill. For some more perspective, the field I'm standing in right now, check out this shot from above. They get 60 tons of old lithium-ion batteries and scrap metal used to make battery cells. What do they do with it? This is what they do with it. They recycle it and extract out the raw materials. We're talking about lithium, cobalt, nickel, materials that are in high demand right now and relatively short supply. The reason? Because we're seeing an explosive number of electric vehicles being built, and many will be sold, more than a million by 2025. J.B. Straubel says that's great, loves to see the EVs. His concern is that there won't be enough of the raw materials needed for EV batteries.
And it's incredibly exciting to see all these announcements and to see, you know, major automakers and new startups alike announcing huge programs and factories. But, a lot more of that investment has to find its way to the top of the food chain to figure out, you know, where these materials will come from, investing in new mines, refining and recycling.
So what do they do with the materials that they recycle here? They ship them up the road to the Panasonic battery plant at the Tesla Gigafactory. They're testing building cells with the renewed or recycled material. Shep, they're just scratching the surface here. And believe me, there are millions upon millions of old lithium-ion batteries here, and I'm sure many in a lot of drawers around the country, people who had an old cell phone, threw it in the drawer, and they've forgotten about it.
Guilty as charged. Phil LeBeau, thank you. Facebook refriending Australia, and that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. The social media platform lifting its ban on news content down under. Facebook had blocked access because of a bill that would have forced them to pay publishers for content. Australia's government today buckling to the pressure and announcing it would change the law to give Facebook the ability to negotiate deals. Jeep facing pressure to drop the name Cherokee from its popular line of SUVs. The principal chief of the Cherokee Nation says there is no honor in plastering the name on the side of a car. Jeep started using the Cherokee name more than 45 years ago. The automaker says it's committed to a dialogue, but did not say whether it would drop the name. The TV dinner era eyeing a comeback. Americans spending more time shopping in the frozen food aisle during the pandemic. A new report finds frozen food sales jumped 21% last year compared to 2019. Consumers spent more than $65 billion on frozen food, and the top three categories? Seafood, chicken, and appetizers. On Wall Street, the Dow up 16, bouncing back from steep losses. The S&P up 5, but the NASDAQ down 68. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour, time for the top of the news. The sports world reacting to the news that Tiger Woods is seriously injured after a rollover car crash.
And I'm sick to my stomach. It hurts to
see one of your, I mean, now my closest friends, you know, get in an accident. And, man, I just hope he's all right.
Woods now said to be in stable condition after the crash this morning south of Los Angeles. That's the late word from the Los Angeles County Fire Chief. You see the SUV here mangled on its side being carried away. Fire officials say they had to use an axe and a special removal tool to get him out of the vehicle. Tiger Woods was conscious, we're told, but did suffer serious injuries to both legs. Officials confirm he's currently in the hospital. Fire officials say there was no evidence that Woods was impaired at the time of the crash, his SUV the only car involved. NBC's Simone Boyce continues our coverage live near the crash site in Rancho Palos Verdes. Simone, give us an update.
Shep, we're about a quarter of a mile away from where the accident took place. This is an area called Rolling Hills Estates. And it's called Rolling Hills because there are lots of steep roads and curves, like the one that you see behind me. Tiger Woods was traveling downhill. This is Hawthorne Boulevard, just minutes before the crash took place. And authorities today told us that while the speed limit here is 45 miles per hour, they often catch people going over 80 miles per hour. And they added that it's very possible that Tiger Woods was traveling at a greater speed than normal himself. Now, Shep, we also learned a little bit more about his condition when first responders found him. They said that he was lucid, he was calm, but he wasn't able to stand on his own. So that's why they had to pry him from that vehicle and transport him on a backboard to a local hospital. Now, the cause of the accident is still under investigation, but we're told that weather was not a factor. Now, one thing that we do know, he was wearing a seatbelt, and that probably saved his life. Shep?
Simone, thank you. There's one state, just one, throwing out the vaccine rollout playbook, going against federal guidelines and prioritizing age over health or employment status. Connecticut, announcing vaccines will be available exclusively by age group. The one exception, teachers and others who work in schools. Additional essential workers and those with underlying medical conditions will not get priority. They'll have to wait until their age group is called to get vaccinated. So far, Connecticut has been seeing some success in getting shots in arms. In fact, the state's administered more than 800,000 COVID shots, 90% of what it's received, and 6 out of 10 residents over the age of 75 and high risk have been vaccinated. The Connecticut governor, Ted Lamont, says his vaccine strategy is, quote, keep it simple, stupid. Ted Lamont joins us now. Governor, thanks so much. This age approach, Ned, it's different than most of the country. What's the thinking in Connecticut? What's behind this?
Look, it worked really well for 75 and above, Shep. That's where over half of our complications and fatalities were. It worked really well for 65 and above. And I looked at the guidance from the CDC when they had essential workers and folks with comorbidity. It was about half of our adult population. It just would have been chaos. We figured we could really focus on the older population, 55 and above. That's where 96% of the complications take place.
You know, some of your essential workers are none too pleased. They're arguing that this new policy is wrong because frontline workers, those who are out front like grocery store employees, should be prioritized. What do you say to them?
I say a lot of them live in multi-generational housing, and thank God they're there with their mothers and fathers or grandparents, and they have been vaccinated now so they know they can get home safely. And they know that within 3 weeks, 45 and above will be able to get vaccinated. So they know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and their turn is coming fast.
So do you have a timeline laid out? Like, when do you hit 65? When do you hit 55? When do you hit 45? Or however you're doing it?
Yeah, right now it's 65 and above. We're at probably 40 plus percent there right now. 55 and above will start on Monday. 45 and above will start 3 weeks thereafter. So people know exactly when they can count on getting that vaccine.
But if I have diabetes or I'm obese or I have chronic lung problems and I'm 35 years old, I can't get a vaccine and I'm stuck inside. And I'm not happy if I live in Connecticut.
I'll tell you, Shep, what was shocking was the CDC list didn't even have diabetes on there as one of those comorbidities. But we're finding, you know, folks over 55 are two or three times more likely to have a comorbidity or something that puts them at risk.
A massive hack into the computer systems of our federal government was likely much bigger and much more complex than Congress realized. That from tech executives today, as they testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee. The president of Microsoft warns they're still investigating because many of the breaches have not yet been found. The CEO of FireEye says the hackers' behavior was most consistent with Russian cyber attacks.
They've already moved on to whatever's next. We got to go find it. This attacker, you know, maybe their pencil's down for a few months, but the reality is they're going to come back. They're going to be an ever-present offense that we have to play defense against. And how they break in will always evolve. And all we can do is close the window and close the security gap better next time.
At least nine federal agencies compromised, including the Departments of State, Justice, Treasury, Energy, and Homeland Security. CNBC's Ayman Javers live in Washington. Ayman, what did we learn from them today?
Well, Shep, we saw two things today that we don't normally see. Companies arguing that the government needs to force them to do something, and Republicans and Democrats coming together to criticize a major American tech company. Now, Microsoft President Brad Smith argued that the U.S. government needs to force American companies to admit it when they've been hacked. Experts say companies often don't want to confess because they fear lawsuits or damage to their brand names, even though keeping mum can help the bad guys. Smith said that has to change.
It's not a typical step when somebody comes and says, place a new law on me, put it on ourselves, put it on our customers. But I think it's the only way we're going to protect the country. And I think it's the only way we're going to protect the world.
Both Democrats and Republicans criticized Amazon, revealing that they had asked Amazon Web Services to testify today, but the company declined to show up. Now, what the security experts told Congress was this hack was highly targeted, deeply damaging, and probably isn't even over yet.
There's no doubt in my mind this was planned. It was an operation. There's a lot of people involved. And the question really is, where's the next one?
The White House today hinted that it may soon have more to say about exactly who did this, and they said it will be weeks, not months, before the U.S. responds. Now, Shep, I talked to Kevin Mandia today. His company, FireEye, was the one that first found and revealed this hack back in December. He said this attack was so successful, there's likely one outcome. The bad guys are going to try this again. Back to you.
Ayman Javers, thank you.
You bet.
Today marks 1 year since a group of men chased and gunned down Ahmaud Arbery. His mother is now suing the people involved for millions of dollars. Named in the suit, Gregory and Travis McMichael. The father and son are charged with Arbery's murder. Their co-defendant, William Bryan, also named in the civil suit. Arbery's mother is also suing law enforcement officials and prosecutors in Glenn County, Georgia. She claims they tried to cover it all up. It took more than 2 months for prosecutors to even charge the men. Video shows the men in two pickup trucks chasing Arbery. Prosecutors say Travis McMichael hopped out and shot the 25-year-old and that he allegedly called him the N-word as he lay dead on the ground. The McMichaels told police that Arbery resembled a suspect in a string of local burglaries. They pleaded not guilty and are awaiting trial. A toy with a potentially lethal surprise and a deadly shootout caught on camera on a CNBC trip coast to coast. Louisiana. The sheriff's office releasing video of a deadly shootout at a gun shop in Metairie. Deputies say Joshua Williams was in the Jefferson Parish store with his brother and nephews buying ammo when a worker noticed he was carrying a loaded gun. They told him to unload it or leave it in the car. Video shows Williams head for the door. Then he fires into the parking lot. He then turns around and kills a customer and later an employee. A few moments after, they say other employees shot and killed him. No word yet on a motive, but Williams' brother says he just flipped out. Arizona. A shocking and potentially deadly discovery for a family in Phoenix. 5,000 fentanyl pills inside a sandwich bag stuffed into this toy. Police say the parents bought the toy at a thrift shop for their daughter. They were cleaning it when they found the drugs. Florida. This crocodile needs a new diet. Veterinarians cut open its stomach to remove a shoe that it swallowed. Not once, but twice. The shoe apparently fell off a zip liner at an alligator farm in St. Augustine. Vets say the croc ate the shoe, then threw it up, then ate it again. Good thing he didn't wait for the other shoe to drop on this CNBC trip. Coast to coast. In The Art of War, Sun Tzu says, "The wise warrior avoids the battle." Seems McDonald's missed the memo. It's going all in on the chicken wars with three new McSandwiches. But can they ruffle Chick-fil-A's feathers? Or is it too late to join the flock? And how many bad bird puns can we scramble up here? You shall find out. Plus, game on. Sports fans back at Madison Square Garden for the first time in nearly a year. Coming up, what it takes to get a ticket. At long last, stadiums and arenas in New York are welcoming back fans for the first time in nearly a year. Tonight, Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous, and Barclays, home of the Nets, are holding or allowing hundreds of fans in the stands for Knicks and Nets games. There's still COVID restrictions in place, no doubt, and the arenas will not be nearly packed houses. But for many fans, it's a glimmer of hope that things will return to something more normal. CNBC's Rahel Solomon live outside Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Hi, Rahel.
Hi, Shep. Yeah, Barclays Center looking a little different on this game night than perhaps in years past. Fans actually went in a different entrance through these COVID tents that we'll show you in just a moment. But of course, the Nets have had an incredible season. This is a huge night for New York sports fans and New York in general. This is the first time that paying fans, real people, not cardboard cutouts, will be here at the arena in about a year. And fans that we spoke to out here in Brooklyn say this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Just excitement, man. Can't wait. And especially this is, you're never going to see a game with like 200 people and all these like NBA All-Stars like playing with each other.
300 fans? What can be bad? And we're going to win our sixth straight game.
Now, to be clear, it's about 300 fans and lots of protocols for those fans. Of course, they'll have to socially distance. They'll have to wear masks. They were also said in-home COVID tests. They're going to have to show a negative test result before they're allowed in. Also, lots of protocols for the arenas like Barclays Center, like Madison Square Garden. Some of those include having 10,000 capacity and then limiting that capacity to 10%. Also, the Department of Health has to sign off on your reopening. The Nets and the Knicks, by the way, among the 13 NBA teams that are allowing for limited in-person attendance. The CEO of Barclays telling us that their precautions here at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, among the strongest in the NBA.
Concession stands will be closed. All of our food will be delivered to your seat. You'll order from a QR code. And our team merchandise store will be closed. You'll be able to have merchandise, team merchandise delivered to your seat as well.
Now, we also talked to Dr. Stephen Morse. He is a professor of epidemiology at Columbia. Shep, he tells me that he personally wouldn't be at a game tonight, but he says it's not actually the arena that he's concerned about.
There are going to be people bunched up getting in and out of the subway, and very often it's just a real temptation to congregate and get together with your friends and maybe strangers who feel the same way about that particular event.
And Governor Cuomo's office here in New York saying that the success of these large reopenings, these large arenas, their reopenings will then set the path for smaller arenas. Shep.
Let's go, Brooklyn. Thank you very much, Rahel. Back in 1995, the Chick-fil-A cows first told America to eat mo' chicken. 26 years later, McDonald's just might agree. Tomorrow, the fast food giant plans to roll out not one or two, but three new chicken sandwiches. Crispy, spicy, and a deluxe. That one comes with lettuce and tomato, so you know it's got to be good for you. Mickey D's is the latest front in the chicken sandwich wars. Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, Wendy's already duking it out as fast food poultry sales soar. According to Forbes, they've nearly tripled over the past decade. CNBC's Kate Rogers now on the Battle of the Birds.
It's
got me really fired up.
All this clucking is big business, and tomorrow it's on. McDonald's is officially getting in on the chicken wars with its sandwich launch. While the Golden Arches has long had a McChicken lineup, this is a premium offering.
They're late to the game on chicken sandwich, but I suspect they will catch up, only because they have an advertising budget that dwarfs everybody else's.
The beef around the bird has been ongoing for years now, picking up when Popeyes launched its premium chicken sandwich back in 2019. Chick-fil-A chimed in on Twitter saying it had the original chicken sandwich. This sparked a war among legions of fried chicken fans online, weighing in to support their favorite.
Somebody love their chicken sandwich here.
All of this chicken is big business. U.S. consumers ordered 2.6 billion chicken sandwiches last year, according to the NPD Group, most from quick service restaurants. And if it seems like everyone is clamoring to get in on the action, that's because restaurants big and small are. Taco Bell announced it's testing a crispy chicken taco. Burger King said its own hand-breaded chicken sandwich is on the way. And Wendy's and KFC also recently rolled out new products. Chicken may be big business, Shep, but burgers are still actually number one. Last year, consumers ordered about 7 billion of them at restaurants, according to NPD Group. Online, though, DoorDash says that the fried chicken sandwich was the second most ordered item last year, behind only the chicken finger. Shep?
All right, Kate, thank you. Artists have been known to hide messages in their work, and apparently it's no different for NASA. Engineers there had a doozy on their Mars rover Perseverance. The secret message for us Earthlings, next. The engineers running the Perseverance mission hid a secret code in the parachute that lowered the Mars rover down to the surface. A lot of people noticed what they thought might be a binary code pattern in the red and white lines of that chute. Now we know the red represent ones and the white represent zeros. It's the language of computers, of course. And once the online hive mind figured that out, didn't take them long to see that the code spelled out "Dare Mighty Things." That motto appears on signs all around Jet Propulsion Laboratory headquarters. 65 seconds left on a race to the finish. Officials say Tiger Woods was seriously hurt, but conscious, and is now in stable condition in a hospital after surgery following the crash and rollover of his SUV near Los Angeles this morning. There was no evidence of impairment, according to the sheriff, and Tiger's agent says the surgery is for multiple leg injuries. Pfizer and Moderna executives say America's COVID vaccine supply will get a lot bigger next month. The drug makers say they're on track to deliver 220 million doses by the end of March. And the White House now says President Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden will visit Texas on Friday after the historic and deadly freeze left the state in crisis. And now you know the news. Of this Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Twitter at The News on CNBC and stay tuned for Shark Tank. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.